Kim Gordon. Thanks very much, Kim Gordon. Steve Bertrand here on 720 WGN. And, well, it's just been a rough start to the week every way around. Luckily, we've got the boys from Chicago Inno here to turn that around. You're listening to The Business Lunch. Will Flanagan and Jim Dahlke are in the studio. You guys would not have made that mistake, would you?
Never.
No.
We're tech savvy, Steve.
That's right. Yeah, are you tech savvy, or you just write tech savvy?
The latter, yes.
Right. So, Kim Gordon, you said you're ready to jump in anytime the story changes.
I'm ready.
Later in the segment, this half hour, we're going to do their real or fake segment. You know, they're always talking about startups and how crazy some of them are. So stick around. I want you to take part in that, okay?
All right, great.
I've talked before as well about Fair Oaks Dairy in Indiana, the Fair Oaks Farm, I think it's called, that, and all the stuff that they do environmentally, how they capture some of the methane and turn it into gas that they actually use. There's a huge program going on at the hog farms in northern Missouri, and they're about to announce a new phase in their efforts to take the gas from the pig manure. And
are you starting the real or fake early?
It's real or fake. and soon it will heat Will Flanagan's water. Okay. So we're talking too much. Let's talk about what's in Chicago Inno. In one of the, you know, we talk about the disparity when it comes to minorities in the tech world. There was been a real push in the past few years about women in the tech world.
Mm-hmm.
But there's a program coming out of Chicago, right, to sort of address that when it comes to minorities.
Yeah, exactly. It's no secret that tech has a diversity problem, and everybody sort of blames the tech companies for not doing enough. The tech companies kind of blame the pipeline for not having enough talented individuals in the pipeline ready to be hired. And so one organization in Chicago is actually working on that pipeline problem. They're a new, very young nonprofit called Rework, and they are partnering with the Chicago Tech Hub Blue 1647 to offer free sales training targeting minorities on Chicago's South and West Side. So it's a pilot program launching this fall, 4-month program over the weekends, where they teach sales skills like how to qualify leads, hands-on training with Salesforce and LinkedIn software, basically giving minorities on the South and West Sides all the skills they need to take entry-level sales jobs, and then they partner them with interviews at 25 Chicago tech companies.
Now, it's not unlimited, right? Was it 6 or 7 in the first class?
Yes, a small class. They're going to aim for 6 or 7 just in the pilot, but they are looking to expand it out. Blue 1647 is in a bunch of different cities across the U.S., and they're thinking about kind of scaling the program along with Blue 16.
Well, great. Keep track of that. Let me know how that works out later. The other story was about the Dollar Shave Club, right? Now, this is a company, an online company, that went crazy.
On-demand razors.
They had a great sort of YouTube film a few years ago, took off, and now they're big bucks, right?
Yeah, so Dollar Shave Club is a great recent tech store. I mean, they're 3-4 years old, and they just sold for $4 billion. They were acquired, and you know, it was a big win because everyone's talking about this slowdown in tech investing. So when there is a big exit victory like that, it kind of gets the tech media really excited. And there's a local angle here, is that the Pritzker Group Venture Capital was one of the early investors in Dollar Shave Club, and we talked to Matt McCall with Pritzker Group, who said it was one of their biggest exits to date.
Yeah, exactly. And it was great to kind of learn about their philosophy in investing in e-commerce companies. I mean, they are big investors in Honest Company, which is Jessica Alba's company. They're big investors in Casper, which is the online mattress company. They also invested in Tickets Now, which sold for over $200 million a few years ago. So really, it's interesting to learn their mindset. When it comes to e-commerce, Pritzker says they are targeting the millennial shopper, which I found was really interesting, the way they kind of look at disruptive e-commerce companies.
And so, well, I mean, I think that makes sense. Go back to the Dollar Shave Club.
Yeah.
You were talking about the market share that they have. Go ahead.
Yeah, they're nearing 20% market share by the end of the year, which is insane. I mean, this isn't a product that they've created, like, you know, Uber and ride sharing. This is razors.
Right.
Razors have been around forever. Like, the Patriots play in Gillette Stadium. Like, these are big brands they're competing against. These aren't, you know, 5, 10, 15-year-old companies. So it's amazing that they've been able to kind of come in and take that market share fast.
And when you take that and you say that the Pritzkers are going after the millennials, I mean, I think that maybe I'm sure there is an age breakdown on who uses the Dollar Shave Club. You know, I'm in my early 50s. I can't imagine doing it, and I don't know that I know anyone who does. And yet they've got 20% of the market.
Exactly. And the one really fascinating part about that, too, is McCall kind of described the structural advantage that Dollar Shave Club had over Gillette. Gillette relies very heavily on a deal with Walgreens, so they can't really offer the monthly online subscription model that Dollar Shave Club can. So they really had an advantage that really positioned them in a place to really capture that online market share that the traditional razor retailers just couldn't.
So they created a nice brand for themselves with the video and then put themselves in a situation where the bigger guys, Goliath, couldn't land a punch, really.
Yeah, and I think one thing that was really interesting talking to Matt McCall was saying that, you know, these companies that he looks for in the e-commerce space is that strong narrative. And that, because, again, Dollar Shave Club isn't really doing anything that innovative. These aren't amazing razors. They're not delivering it to you that fast. It's just a great story, and I think that tells you a lot about what the quote-unquote millennial shopper is looking for.
Price
and convenience. Narrative and story over product.
It's so funny. I mean, I went to my Walgreens yesterday and bought razors.
Yeah.
So there you go. Okay, it's 12:18. We're going to take a break, come back with real or fake. When Will and Jim look at Chicago startups, some of them will be real, some of them won't. And Kim Gordon is going to figure out which is which. It's 12:23. You're listening to the Wintrust Business Lunch on 720 WGN. The boys from Chicago Inn are here, Jim Dahlke and Will Flanagan. Sometimes we play real or fake, and they'll talk about different startups in the city, and then you have to figure out whether or not they're just outrageous. Can I just start with one?
Please.
There's a guy who's come up with a drink glass that actually levitates. He relies on magnets, and he's got like a little tumbler, and you just place it over the station, and it will float 5 to 6 inches in the air.
Real.
You guys wrote about this thing. I can't believe this is real.
Yeah, 100% it's real. I mean, that's why we play real or fake, because you have to have a sense of humor about, you know, all of these startups and products. And yes, it's funny, but it's also kind of inspiring to see that
here's what's funny about
crazy
it.
Ideas are real.
Here's what's funny about it. He's asking for $50,000 on Kickstarter,
yep,
and he's almost there. Now, that's pretty funny.
If you see pictures of it and you see the videos, a floating glass. We have big problems in the world. Why do we need a floating glass? It looks really cool.
Think about entertaining at your next cocktail party with a floating glass.
Well, back in my day, it was the dribbler glass. Okay, sure. So this is where we've come. All right, hit me with a couple here, guys.
All right, let's lead things off with Pooper.
Pooper app.
Pooper is an on-demand dog poop pickup app. When your dog goes to the bathroom, you mark the location on your phone, take a picture of it, and then someone else comes to pick it up. This is a subscription service, $15 to $35 a month. Pooper, your dog's poop in someone else's hands.
So you have to walk out to the spot, photograph. So you've done everything but
pick it up.
Kim, what do you think?
Oh, I think it's true. 100% true.
I think this one's absolutely true.
This is a real app.
Yeah.
Yes, it's in beta in San Francisco right now, so we'll see if it survives and expands.
Can I ask the point of the picture? What's the picture about?
The dog picker-upper knows which one in the minefield
Really?
So they're only going to come pick up one? They're not going to just come pick it all up? Or they charge per poop?
They're charging per month. It's
per user,
service.
Yeah. So it's whatever your dog does.
Right. So I guess no matter where.
Right.
Correct. Its tagline is the smart alternative to picking up after your dog.
That's questionable, I think. Okay. How about another one?
All right. The other one is you guys have heard of Pokemon Go, which uses augmented reality to bring Pokemon to the real world. Well, this is dogmented reality. It allows you to bring a virtual pet into your life. Just hold up your phone wherever you are, and it drops a furry friend right into your surroundings. It's dogmented reality. It makes money via in-app purchases. You can buy your virtual pooch collars, treats, and toys. Dogmented reality.
Can I get an English bulldog?
Yes, 100%. Okay. It's got, I think, 5 to 10 breeds on and is adding new breeds every
day. I'm saying true.
So you just carry around a picture of a dog on your phone?
So have you played Pokemon Go?
No, I haven't.
So you hold up your phone and it brings the dog into your surroundings. So if you said, I want a dog in this studio right now, you would hold up your phone, you would look through it, and you would see a dog running around the studio.
I'm going to say this one's fake.
This is fake. This came from the recesses of my brain.
Nice. Well, maybe you should develop it.
Look, I already want one. Maybe
I know,
you should
me too.
Go farther with it.
I love when you said, can you get an English bulldog? He goes, yeah, they've got 5 or 10 breeds.
That's when I thought it was real.
Steve, you're getting pretty good. We used to be able to get this past you.
No, no.
All right, the next one is Trash Day. This is a service where someone will take your trash from your house and bring it out to the curb.
Those are called children, yeah.
Trash Day. It's a monthly subscription service between $30 and $50, depending on how much trash you have and where you live. The tagline, never take the trash out again. Trash Day.
Okay.
I'm saying if you can't pick up your dog poop, then you definitely want somebody to pick up your trash. It's true, for sure.
I think this is a good one because there are a lot of elderly people who can't do it, and their kids are willing to pay for that.
That is correct. That is a true San Francisco startup.
I don't think I've lost to you guys in a few months, right? I think we haven't done it in a few months, but you got another one?
We're loaded.
All right, let's try to squeeze in. We got to do two more in a minute.
All right, two more. Here we go. Expertise-y. Steve, you are, everybody is an expert of something, whether it's, you know, drinking a Pilsner or giving fantasy football advice. Everybody is good at one thing. So this is a marketplace for monetizing your expertise. You say what you're an expert of, and someone can leverage that for a half hour or an hour and a half at a time. If you think of the Chicago startup Wyzant, which connects people who are studying for a big test to tutors, this is basically the Wyzant for everything.
So it's like
easy expertise.
It's like having a Cliff Clavin just a click away.
Like an Andy's list of experts, all different types.
I'm going to go fake.
I'm going real.
This is a fake one.
Oh, how does it happen?
Steve,
you are on this. It happened. Okay, real quick, one more.
All right, last one. Who now? Everybody who is single these days has an online dating profile. Who now allows you to create a private online community where you can share the images and profiles of the people that you are swiping with and connecting with online with your group of friends. So you can say, these are the dates that I've had in the last week. You can share them with your buddies in a private online messaging service to kind of, I don't know, brag about
or get approval.
Exactly. Yeah. So, yeah, you're talking about the
it depends on the gender. The women are trying to get approval. The men are bragging.
Right. Who now? Sort of a private social network with your friends for the people that you've been online dating with.
I'm not confident. I'm going to say real.
I'm going real.
It's real.
Oh,
wow, Steve, a perfect game.
Steve, right, perfect score. Goes to show. You get the gold medal.
I know the great ideas when I see them. All right, boys, we're a little behind. Nice to see you again. We'll see you again next Monday. Thanks very much, Kim Gordon. Steve Bertrand here. It is the Wintrust Business Lunch on 720 WGN. You know, the World Bank has estimated that around the world, agriculture accounts for about 40% of the total methane emissions. What comes from the animals we eat, the emissions really, is more dangerous than carbon dioxide. It's something that needs to be fixed, carbon monoxide, I should say. Well, Chris Roach is on the phone line from Raceline Alternative Energy. I'm messing up my science just to start the whole thing out, Chris, but the point I'm trying to make is with this great amount of waste from hogs and from cattle and other livestock, you know, that's doing not only damage to our ecology, it's sort of a missed opportunity. It's a chance for us to harness and turn that into usable fuel, and that's what you guys have been doing in northern Missouri, correct?
Yeah, so we have a project in northern Missouri with Smithfield Foods. They're one of the larger hog growing and processing companies globally, frankly, probably the largest. They've got an area up in northwest Missouri where they have a number of CAFOs, the confined animal feeding operations, where you get the high concentration of the hogs themselves and then obviously the waste that they produce. So the normal standard operating procedure is you've got lagoons that are open and they receive the manure from these barns, and then on some frequency the farm would remove the liquid from the lagoons and spread it out on fields to help get rid of the manure and get rid of the nutrients, which generally gives you some, you know, some negative impacts of some odor, but these are all permitted activities. But while the material sitting in the lagoons, the manure breaks down and is essentially anaerobically converted to methane, and that would normally just vent off to the atmosphere. So that, from this operation, has been a little over a couple billion cubic feet of methane per year, which is equivalent to about 850,000 metric tons of carbon dioxide if you convert the methane to CO2. So what we're doing is going in and we're covering all these lagoons, which is not a new technique. It's been done many times throughout all these types of ag facilities. And the covers essentially trap the gas and prevent it from being released to the atmosphere. The covers also have the added benefit of keeping rainwater from commingling with the lagoon water, which then if you have a big rain event, you might have some rainwater, you know, would escape from the farm because of just flooding,
sure,
too much rain. Then it's not contaminated water, so okay, that's another added benefit.
So if the covers aren't new, what's new here?
So the new features that we're doing, one, we're taking the gas from under the covers, we're purifying it and essentially making it pipeline quality, and we're injecting it into one of the larger intrastate gas transmission pipelines. This one happens to take gas from sort of the southwest area around Kansas, Oklahoma, and transmits gas up to the Great Lake region.
The natural gas that you can produce there is essentially the same as what people are getting by fracking and drilling in other means, right?
Yes. Yep, absolutely. So we basically have to meet the same pipeline requirements. And, you know, if there's gas that's being pulled out of the ground that's from fracking or from any other activity, they also typically have to clean up that gas and,
sure,
make it of a particular purity to be considered natural gas. But
the phrase I'm reaching for, is it called a carbon digester? Is that what changes this into the gas?
It's anaerobic digestion.
Anaerobic, okay.
Free of oxygen, you know, very, very old biology. It's been used for centuries, frankly. It's the common means of converting organic waste in wastewater treatment facilities, in all kinds of applications where you have organic material and you want to process it to dispose of it. In this instance, you're making methane as the primary product. CO2 is a second product, but you make enough methane to make it economically viable. So we're producing this methane, we're injecting it into a pipeline, and then ultimately it will get to either an end user that will make electricity, or in most instances today, the gas is actually getting into a fueling station where we put into a vehicle that can burn compressed natural gas as its fuel.
So is this, I just talked earlier in the show about a dairy in Indiana, Fair Oaks Farms, which,
yeah,
you know, produces their own fuel and then uses it in their trucks. So this is spreading, right? But this project in Missouri is among the biggest.
Well, it is probably the biggest. We do have a lot of scale with Smithfield as a partner. We as a developer, we have an investor and our owner, Rudy Raceline, has invested a lot of his own time and money in this project, more than you'd probably see with a typical developer. And so the costs that we've had to overcome are not insignificant and, frankly, still probably not achievable for your typical farm operation,
right,
that might,
right,
think of a project like this.
Well, that's the thing, right? Because there are a lot of critics who don't like the idea of these mega farms, but if you're going to reap this benefit, you almost need a mega farm. I mean, you need a big population.
Yeah, scale's certainly critical in trying to make the economics work for these projects. One of the things that we've had to deal with is the cost of interconnecting into the pipeline. That's always a challenge. So if a small, I mean, the interconnects themselves can be anywhere from $1 to $3 million just to tie your project to the pipeline. And it's cost prohibitive. But as we get smarter with working with the pipelines, we think we're going to be able to bring that cost down. And we're also trying to work on our systems where, yes, we have this large project. We're working on 9 farms. These farms have anywhere from 5 to 17 lagoons each. It's a lot of scale. But we're working on 2 to 4 lagoon-sized solutions that can be more broadly adopted by farmers in Iowa and Illinois and anywhere that, you know, this is a common practice.
So you can adjust the phrase any way you want, but this is such a great example of making lemonade out of lemons. I mean, you know, this waste that is there, what a way to fuel it and or harness it, I should say, turn it into fuel so that we can all use,
yeah,
it again. Go ahead.
Sorry, go ahead. I was just going to say this is really just the first part of our vision, and really the real reason we're doing this project and why our company exists is we're using this project to also reestablish tens of thousands of acres of native habitat, which is basically prairie, and it used to be very common throughout the Midwest. But this prairie habitat is intended to be planted let's say, as buffers between farm fields and streams where these grasses would filter out runoff, nutrients, erosion that typically is getting into our waterways, and so thereby improving water quality in our watersheds. But also that grass can be used as a crop, and you can cut the grass and digest it like the manure to make additional energy. And the way we're approaching designing these native stands of grass to be, again, intermingled with normal farming land is that it would be also good habitat for wildlife, birds, pollinators, et cetera. So we're really focused on working with conservation folks, with fish and wildlife, with a bunch of those who are typically opposed to these industrial type farming operations, right, so that when they see our solution, we can also get their input and get their buy-in that we're doing something that's very sustainable, that's integrated, that's actually trying to be very forward thinking and help generally with how these, you know, large operations to grow protein in the Midwest can be improved over time to have a positive impact on our ecosystem.
It is exciting stuff. Chris Roach is the director at Raceline Alternative Energy. Thanks for taking time to talk to us today about it. I appreciate it.
My pleasure. Thank you, Steve.
It's the Business Lunch on 720 WGN. You're listening to the Wintrust Business Lunch on 720 WGN. Steve Bertrand here. Happy Monday to you. Thanks very much for tuning in. Art, there's a really cool project coming to Chicago later this month, and I guess around the world, but it's called the 48-Hour Film Project. And in the studio with me now is Oriana Opis. How did I do it?
Opis.
I did it. Okay. From Women in Film in Chicago, but with this organization as well. And this week is kind of the last chance to get involved with it in a way, but tell me about the 48-Hour Film Project, because it sounds so cool.
So it's a lot of fun. On Friday night, your team goes to a specific location and picks up a couple items that your film has to have. So it's a particular genre, a particular character name, a particular line of dialogue. And then starting at 7 p.m. on Friday, you got to go. You got to write it, cast it, shoot it. And then you have to drop everything off on Sunday evening.
And the Friday is August 26th, so
that's
a couple
correct.
Of weeks away.
Yep.
Does everyone have the same props and characters?
Yes.
Okay, so all these teams in Chicago making a film in 48 hours have similar tools that they're dealing with.
Yeah, and you'll be surprised how many different stories can be wrapped around, like, a fork or a character.
I can remember in writing classes, in creative writing, you know, they would do that. They would give you six or seven things to incorporate, but I'd never thought about it in film.
Yeah.
Have you done it?
I've done it about six times. I did it in L.A., in D.C., in New York, and I just moved back to Chicago and haven't had a chance to do it yet, but I'm happy to be kind of facilitating it.
So, you know, this is a business show, and so the idea is what's the business angle here? But a couple things I want to talk about, getting more women involved in mm-hmm. it, but also just as a way for people to not only foster their skills, collaborate with their skills, but maybe be seen by others as well.
Well, short films are really great calling cards. You know, you talk about the business aspect of it, and this is a great opportunity because a lot of times we put things off, we procrastinate, and so these great short film ideas just get kind of tossed aside. But here, this is it. You only get the 2 days to make it, and at the end, you end up with a final project that you can actually use to say to investors, this is what I've done with very little time and resources. Imagine what I can do with something bigger.
I've made reference, I think, to teams. Are these teams of people that do it, or it might be done in a solo effort, right?
There have been teams made up of one person who has shot it on camera, done the sound, done the acting, done the editing all by him or herself. I wouldn't recommend it.
No.
But they're teams. Usually you know each other, or you can go to one of these meetups like on the 16th.
This is tomorrow, right? That's tomorrow?
That's tomorrow at the Lincoln Tap Room. And, you know, go find a team that's missing a certain crew position that you can fill.
I think it's a very cool idea to just the teamwork of it, the forced collaboration. We're talking about, you know, not just filming something, setting up a shoot and acting, but the screenwriting of it. I mean, the inception of it, it's all got to be done in 48 hours.
That's right. Sometimes you can set up like a writer's room and have like five writers put ideas together for one film, or you can just have one writer who's just done it a million times and knows what she's doing.
And so there is an effort, I know, to increase the role of, or the numbers of women in this project, right?
Yeah, you know, Jerry, who runs the 48-hour film project in Chicago, actually reached out to us, which is awesome, and said, you know, we have these teams, but we kind of want to see more representation from women filmmakers. And, you know, working for women in film, I know a ton of them, and they're really great. So I was really happy to kind of team up with him and get more participating.
We talk a lot about involving more women in the tech world and all of that. Mm-hmm. Is it a similar issue in film? I mean, what does Women in Film Chicago do?
They're very similar. We basically try to get an equal playing field for men and women, and especially in behind the camera roles, you know, your editors, your directors of photography. Those are usually traditionally male-dominated positions, and we're trying to get more women to step forward.
Are women held out of it, or are women not interested in getting into it?
I think traditionally maybe it was lack of interest, but probably because of lack of exposure. And now you're seeing some of the greatest cinematographers being women. Some of the greatest editors are women, especially in our great city, because we have such a strong advertising community.
All right, give me just an example, one narrative of one of the films that you saw in 48 Hours in Life.
So one of them that I worked on a few years ago was a woman who... It appears that she's having marital problems, but then at the end of the film, we find out that she's really just been fighting with her dog.
Nice, I like that. Is there a chance for the public to see these once
they're
done?
Yeah, a lot of them get uploaded to YouTube afterward. But the cool thing about 48 Hours, after the best of each city has been chosen, you have, I think, a handful of them end up going to the Cannes Film Festival the following year. So, yeah, there's definitely a chance to see them. And in Chicago, the screening for the films is on September 11th and 12th. And I try to remember. I think it's at the Music Box, but I'd have to double check.
Well, we can find that.
Yeah.
Oriana Opus, it was nice to talk to you.
Nice.
Thanks very much for coming in. Good luck. Keep us posted on it, will you?
Will do. Thank you.
It's the Business Lunch on 720 WGN.